The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Gathering. The supernatural world can be a dark, intimidating, and scary place. We gather to shine light on the mysterious and misunderstood aspects of the paranormal world. We bring to the table years of experience as mediums, healing channels, and paranormal investigators.
We share true stories from our experiences to dispel fear where we can and help you discover the amazing layers that make up the paranormal world. You are invited to gather around the metaphysical table with us and discuss the worlds of the unseen on The Gathering Radio Show.
Welcome to The Gathering Radio Show here on the Para-X Network. This is Heidi.
And this is Stephanie. Welcome to another Tuesday. Hope everyone's okay.
Yeah, with all the hurricanes and everything going on, it's like, boy, lots of prayers go out to everybody.
Absolutely. It's been a crazy weather time for everyone, it seems like, you know?
Yeah.
So here we are once again. It's been a whole week since we were on. Heidi, how are you?
Good. How's it going with you?
Good. Good. Been busy, of course.
Yeah, you were out in the woods this weekend.
I was out in the woods this weekend, and, you know, I'm excited because I got stuck in the muck again, but, you know, that's nothing unusual for me.
We need to get you a shirt that says that.
Stuck in the muck with squatchers, I know.
No, just stuck in the muck with Stephanie.
With Steph, yeah.
Stephanie.
Yeah, I know.
Stephanie
I know.
Needs her own shirt that says, I'm stuck in the muck.
Listen, and I had it up to my knees, can I just say? The things I won't do to find Sasquatch, can I, you know? But it was a good trek. We got over to the focus area. So I hope I've mapped kind of out how to get there easier, you know, because we did a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of good areas, I think, for us to set up base camp when we do the overnight. So but we can all talk about that at a different time. But, no, it was great. We discovered a lot more stuff. It was just a really good day to be out there. So I'm glad we got to go.
Yeah, for sure.
So, how about you?
It was a busy weekend. It was fun. I had another breathwork at the studio on Sunday. And it's like when you can do those, it's really awesome to hold space for people. I call it transformation journey, and we go deep into a certain topic, and this topic was conquering fear.
Oh, good.
It was really powerful. So it was really neat to work with a group of people who were saying, you know what, I'm ready to go for it and get rid of things that are blocking my way. And it was really, powerful. We had a lot of people make some huge, there was a lot of awareness that came up this weekend. So it was fun. Fun in a hard, really crazy way, but it was good. Yeah.
Great. That's awesome. And this week is a full moon on Friday. Woohoo. Those are always
Friday the 13th.
I love it. I love it. And I love full moons anyway. So, you know, as a moon child here. So anyway, so our guest tonight is very special. We've talked, Heidi, about orca whales many times on the show, and how spiritual they are and how when we're in the presence of whales, we feel very close to God. And at the same time, I also think that they're spirit animals as well, correct? And I think they're spirit animals among the living.
Well, yeah. I mean, when we talk about any animal, it could be a spirit animal for multiple people, or, you know, it could be for you temporarily. It could be one of your power animals or totem animals. So, you know, it's animals we can be very connected to, any kind of animal, or they show up depending on what kind of energy that we might be might be helpful for us in our journey at that time in our lives. So you know, it whales may not be on anyone's radar, and then, you know, mm-hmm. you end up going on a whale watching trip because it happens to be,
yes. let's say,
just a tour you can take or whatever, and you go on it, mm-hmm. and you have this magical experience that moves you.
Yes.
And that is sometimes the way spirit talks to us and says, hey, we need to get your attention, mm-hmm. and we're going to connect with you through this animal, because sometimes they connect with us in a way through animals that might be less intimidating or scary than right. it would be connecting with us in some other way. So
right.
they connect with us through animals, which... Yes. A lot of us don't feel threatened. I mean, at least in that way, you know.
Right.
We're talking about not being threatened by an animal and mm-hmm. having a spiritual connection. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's fun to talk. And we've had quite a few shows where we've talked about spirit animals.
We have. And
they do show up in, you know, physical form or, you know, online. You'll see a mm-hmm. ad for something or a meme or whatever. And you go, oh, mm-hmm. that's weird. I've seen 3 pictures of whales this week. Like, what's right. going on?
What does it mean? Yeah.
So, yeah, and then it's time to ask some questions. Say, why do we keep seeing pictures of whales? Like, that's yeah. interesting. So, mm-hmm. you know, it is a good, it's a fun way for spirit to communicate with us that we might actually pay attention to and mm-hmm. That we wouldn't necessarily mm-hmm. be afraid of.
Yes.
And, yeah, so it's fun to go around it from this perspective. We're taking a little bit of a different approach on it tonight, but I think it's important because
yes,
all these animals on our planet, we need them. We're all connected. Everything is connected.
Mm-hmm.
We do not live on this planet. We live with the planet. We yes. live all of its creatures. And mm-hmm. and so it's important. I think this is a good topic to get into that yes. aspect of it, because we're here to be humans and we're here to be humane.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And I don't think that that's something that we're all doing.
And you know, the orcas are in peril. You know, when I first started yeah. going, when I first found out about the orcas of the Salish Sea and went to see them, I believe there were over 100. And, you know, through the births, there's been many births in the last, 24 years, I think, since I've started going out there. And yet this year, the number is down to 73.
Wow.
And in the last year, 3 whales have passed away. I think what I've read, and we're gonna ask Howard, but I believe it's from starvation, which is something that can be totally prevented. But I would like to dedicate this show to those 3 whales who have passed since last year, and so I'm just gonna name them. They are Princess Angeline, Scotter, and Nissa. Angeline was a grandma. She was 42, but she still had another 40 years to live. The other 2 were males, and they were 29 and 28 years old, I believe. Howard will correct me if I'm wrong on that, but they were in the prime of their lives, and they're gone now. So with that, I want to introduce Howard Garrett of Orca Network out in the San Juan Islands. Hi, Howard.
Hi, Stephanie. Thank you for having me on.
Yes.
This is very, very interesting to hear, and you are right about all your specs about J17, K25, and the other one that died,
L84.
Yeah, 84. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Nissa.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. It's been quite a year of rude awakenings to mm-hmm. have those all happen about the same time. So,
mm-hmm.
We're still sort of reeling from that and trying to do what we can to help them. You know, basically they need more food, they need more fish, and, you know, so it's sort of a simple, equation, you know, more fish, the whales will be happy and they're and more healthy and be able to have more babies, and that's what we want.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, this is kind of something that when I first started coming out to the island, people were more worried about the toxins in the water, which is still a problem. But I just remember that was a huge thing back then, right, Howard? I just remember hearing about that. That and the whales that had been taken in the early 70s and put into tanks and SeaWorlds and the Miami Seaquarium, for example, taken, stripped from their moms as babies, and brought to these cement pools, essentially. That was the big thing that, lessened the population.
Yeah, the realization that there was a real nutritional deficiency from lack of Chinook salmon came in the late 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
And it has, you know, sort of grown and I think we've made it known, you know, finally, because people have their sort of their pet issues and they're very sure about them. But, you know, we've really got to look at what they need, and that is more food. And so, you know, that's been the case. That's what we're worried about now. And the toxins are still there, but they don't act up really and cause a lot of harm in terms of especially reproductive success, unless mm-hmm. there is this, you know, nutritional problem, lack of food. So, you know, that's the main thing that we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so sad. It's so sad, you know, and it's just, so yeah. The Chinook salmon runs have really, they're hardly there anymore, correct? And this is, can you tell us about that? Is it from the dams? Is it from the salmon farming? What's causing this? Is it from commercial fishing?
Right. All of the above. It's 150 years of disregard and neglect and, you know, just completely, you know, blatant destruction of salmon habitat and overfishing and, you know, clear cutting and dams are very critical in that. The main salmon producing river systems have been dammed up all up and down the coast, really. And now we're starting to realize that, and a few have been taken out and a few more are planned. But the big ones really that we're looking at are the Snake River dams, because they obstruct 5,500 miles of pristine wilderness spawning area in Idaho. And the dams themselves don't have any value. They're actually just, you know, they're deadbeat dams. They cost taxpayers and ratepayers a lot of, like, hundreds of millions every year. And yet they've got a lobby. They've got a strong political voice to keep them. So, you know, we've got to mm-hmm. counter that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, still working on it.
Well, you know, and so it's the dams that are, you know, creating this havoc. But also, aren't the salmon farms, they're bad too, right? Because those...
Oh, salmon farms, they're a big issue. And they're just starting to be better known because the diseases, the parasites and diseases that they spread go into the wild populations and decimate
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's something that we're trying to deal with too, especially those are mainly in Canada, but those are a lot of the same salmon and, you know, that mm-hmm. the southern residents eat. And mm-hmm. it's just, you know, we want to, you know, stop it in its tracks and reverse that trend as much as
mm-hmm.
possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, and the resident orcas, so J clan, so it's JK and L pods, and there's another bunch of orcas that are up in the northern, up in Canada, and they're the northern residents.
Yes.
Now, do they? I don't know a lot about them. Now, do they also eat salmon? They eat salmon, but is it the same kind of salmon that our southern residents prefer?
It is pretty much the same kind of salmon, but those rivers and those runs are more plentiful. So mm-hmm. they seem to be doing okay. They've been growing for mm-hmm. Over a decade in population, and that may have plateaued now, but they seem to be, you know, overall doing better. And, you know, the difference is they've got a more consistent, reliable supply of food. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, they're doing better.
Yeah, that's good
so,
to hear.
We have a question in the chat room from Nina. She's saying, how do we get the J-Pod the salmon that they need, or open the dam, or both? Like, what is it that we can do, the government can do, what can be done to
right.
help them?
Well, yeah, it's actually completely up to the Army Corps of Engineers, but they won't budge because they like the status quo. But they are subject to political leverage, so any you know, any congressional or Washington state legislators that could weigh in would really make a big difference They're all just, they're kind of afraid of the backlash, you know, and it's been going on for 50 years, really. And so it's an entrenched battle, and you know, they have all the cards, you know, the pro-Dan people in terms of the ability to saturate the public with propaganda. So the politicians are kind of afraid of them. So they need us to back them up. And if they have backing and good information, I think they would do something. Especially on the congressional side, they don't have the authority, but they can certainly twist the arm of the Army Corps to breach those dams. And a Republican congressman in Idaho, who is a devoted salmon—I mean, salmon would be his spiritual animal—and he sees that they are diminished. I mean, cutting through all the propaganda. He is seeing, no, that you can't have dams and salmon. And so we got to look at the dams. And he's the first one to step out and say that. A resolution from Congress could make a big difference to get those dams down. And that would add, within 2 or 3 years, add about 2 million adult salmon, Chinook, into the habitat of the orcas. And so,
wow.
That could be a really big difference to them. That could make the difference between extinction and survival. So we need to get that done.
My gosh. Now, we have another question in the chat room, though, about fish spawning ladders. Would that be an option for the dams? Is that something that would work?
The fish ladders that go up the dams so that they can... Well, they're in place. They have spent, the best counts, about $16 to $17 billion since those salmon were listed as endangered in the late 1990s, and on everything possible, including all those fish ladders, which are good for the adults going upstream. Still, some die. You know, it's still that water gets heated up, and it's difficult for them, but those work, but they don't work for the juveniles that come downstream from the spawning beds because they don't actually swim to the ocean. It's an amazing insight into, I mean, they're just every step of the way. They are just, you know, miraculous animals in the way they are adapted to suit their world. And so those juveniles go downstream backwards. They flow. They're always, you know, like looking back where they came from, which may be part of how they find their way back to where they came from. I don't know. But anyway, when they hit that slack water of the reservoirs, and there's about 140 miles of slack water in that stretch of the Snake River with those dams, they're just stuck. They stall out completely. And that throws off their timing because when they hit the ocean, they have to change their whole metabolism to, you know, to swim in salt water. And so that's timed for their usual trip down, and they're slowed down. And that makes them subject to, you know, all kinds of predators and diseases and, you know, things that you get in slack water, and that water warms up. Mm-hmm. And this would also be a big step toward solving global warming, you know, because it would help to, you know, keep the rivers cool. And those salmon are organic, superchargers for the entire mountainsides. Every animal on the side of the mountain eats those salmon that come up and they spawn. And, and you know, so their babies are, you know, their eggs, their offspring are doing fine. And they die upstream. And so every bear and eagle and otter and everything else up the stream of the river just, you know, love them. And they spread them all over the mountainside. So you can find traces of ocean organic chemicals in the trees on the sides of the mountains at like 4,000 and 5,000 feet in Idaho, you know, from those salmon. So, the whole wilderness needs them. And so it's not just for the orcas, and it's not even just for the salmon. It's for, the web of life. So we gotta restore that river.
So how long, for example, has the Snake River Dam been there? Maybe that's a dumb question, but I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
No, not at all. The last one was built in the early 1970s. The first one in 59, and the last of the four in 71. And that was after huge battles between, you know, the tribes that were completely displaced, all of their traditional homes and sacred places and graveyards were completely flooded, washed out. They were, you know, forcibly removed, you know, to higher ground. But also all the fish biologists, the government, you know, state and federal and university fish biologists all weighed in that, no, those dams will kill those salmon.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, the developers filled everybody with the dreams of wealth and riches that, you know, by barging the Lewiston, Idaho upstream would become a seaport and a fabulous city, and we'd electrify the countryside and everything. And none of that happened. You know, the Lewiston is a depressed area. You know, it hasn't panned out at all on the positive side, but the negative predictions have. And that's, you know, unfortunate that the people with the power to do something just won't accept that. They like that, you know, the influx of money that comes in, the subsidies, you know. I mean, basically it's a gravy train, a federal taxpayer-funded gravy train that they're all benefiting from. So they like it as it is. Yeah.
Well, so here's a question. So if all these dams, because they're pretty old, right? You said like 70s and 80s. Why
That's
now?
Right,
so has it just taken this many years for the salmon population to disintegrate so that there just aren't enough back in the ocean?
Well, it's been an ongoing thing, but with the inclusion of the orcas into the argument, that only happened. Well, they were listed as endangered in 2005, and in that language describing why they were endangered, it mentioned that historically their greatest source of food was from that Columbia system, and the Snake River is more than half of the, you know, historically, before the dams, of the entire Columbia. I mean, a huge volume of fish, 16 million Chinook, they say. You know, so that's written in that language. And so it took a while for that to sort of sink in, you know, to the people that were already trying to bring down the dams for the salmon, that here's another hugely powerful argument. And it's also another legal point. They are legally obligated under the ESA to, you know, restore those salmon and the orcas. It's doubled the argument, the power of the argument, and it's changing. I mean, you know, the people, the public is learning. It's gradual, it's hard, it's against a lot of headwinds, but it's happening. But, you know, the whales don't have that much time. They need fish now.
Yeah.
So
they do. Now, one of our listeners has asked, so if they brought down like the big dams that are out there, the huge ones, would smaller dams and more strategic, so replacing them with smaller dams and more strategic spots, could that help the salmon too? Rather than just saying no more dams, we're going to breach all the dams, there's not going to be any more.
Right.
Maybe there could be smaller ones.
Well,
you know, that the salmon could still get through.
Well, that may be, but nobody's really making that argument.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, not in public that, you know, take out all the dams. We're looking at those four specific dams, and there are four more on the main stem of the Columbia River that are hugely economically valuable, you know, for hydropower and transportation and irrigation and a whole lot of things. And we recognize that, you know, they can't come down. Sure, they do harm fish, but not near as much as those four that are at a higher elevation and sort of, you know, these hurdles, the last hurdles that the salmon just can't get over either direction, really. So, yeah, we're only talking about those four. And there are all sorts of mitigations to replace the tiny services. You know, there's a dozen farms that get irrigation, so they would need longer pipes down to the river instead of into the reservoir. So, you know, there are mitigations for all the issues that are brought up. Yeah, absolutely. And that's all been written up. Actually, in 2002, there was a EIS, an Environmental Impact Statement, from the Army Corps, where they outline exactly how they're going to do it. And, you know, the beauty of it is you don't have to blow up concrete. You can leave all the dams, actually, because they've all got these earthen berms on the sides of each dams to sort of complete the way across. And so those can just be notched with earth-moving equipment. And then, you know, let the river rise and flow through the notches, and it'll open it right back up. And after a while, it'll be a river again. And that's all described in detail by the Army Corps of Engineers. You know, so this has been studied. We know how to do it. Yeah.
So
that's
we
what we're working on.
So everyone needs to write their congresspeople and say, hey, let's do this. Let's breach these dams on the Snake River so that that these 2 million salmon can get back into the Pacific and feed the orcas.
Right.
And how fast would that happen? So if say next summer they went and they breached all these four dams, how soon would we notice the difference of those salmon getting back into the sea?
Within 2 years, because those Chinook salmon, their life is about 4 years, but the first year and a half of that is spent up the mountain, you know, as little smolts, little juveniles. So they don't even start their trip until they're about 18 months old. So then when they hit the ocean, they're a little less than two, and they start to come back at the age of three, a few of them, but they really start at the age of four, some not till, you know, they're five or maybe six. But so some would start to show up within a year and a half to 2 years. But within 2.5 to 3 years, there would be a huge abundance of salmon. So that's, you know, it just makes sense to do it. It's the quickest way to get the most salmon and for the least money, and it would actually save the government money and ratepayers. I mean, it just is kind of seems like it's insanity to not bring them down.
Yeah, oh, for sure. You know, and Dave and Ghost Dance has said people need to organize and make their voices known, which is the whole point of the show, really. I felt like if people across America and the world understood this problem and looked at the orcas and how this salmon affects so many different things, not just the orcas, like you said, salmon affect a lot of different creatures. So, and it just, people just need to come together and, you know, let's write to the Congress people, let's write to get these dams down, because that would be the best possible way right now to save the orcas.
And so many people sure love those orcas. Especially around here. And I know you can relate. I sure can, too. And, I mean, it's just, you know, the power of the love for the orcas should be able to get it done.
Yes.
We get reports all the time. We're sort of a hub. We, you know, accept reports and videos and photos from people who see whales, and they're glowing experiences. I mean, you know, they verge on the, you know, the epiphany, you know, the sort of the spiritual awakening of I saw these, you know, beautiful, powerful, and it's hard to describe. I mean, sure, they're big and they're graceful and they're powerful and you can see them frolic and play together, and sometimes they give you a look. I mean, they'll, you know, they're usually in their lives, in their social lives, but sometimes they'll pass by either shore or a boat and, you know, kind of look at people. And when you feel that, you know, there's, you know, as I've heard said, there's somebody home there. You know,
yes.
There's somebody you have just been noticed by a very, you know, advanced, that's intelligent amazing. Being. And it's a beautiful experience.
Oh, absolutely.
And they do have senses. I know your show is paranormal, and there are things about them. I mean, you know, I try to stay empirical science, you know, all the way, but there are too many cases, you know, stories backed up, verified, absolutely true, of orcas who have known somehow when people are around who have very strong feelings for them and have events for them, and they tend to come around and you can see their own enthusiasm in their breeches and that, you know, they stop traveling and they
absolutely,
you know,
and
they're present
to a show.
With you.
You know what? Let's hold that thought. We have to go to commercial break, but everyone will be back in 2 minutes for more about the orcas with Howard Garrett of the Orca Networks here on the Para X channel. This is The Gathering.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal. Para X.
Heidi, what are you listening to? Heidi. Oh, hey, Steph.
Hey,
what has your attention?
Oh, I'm listening to Para X, the calling radio show. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't. What's it all about?
Well, it's hosted by three guys, Jerry, Alan, and Will, and they talk about paranormal investigations, UFOs, cryptozoology, psychic phenomenon, all sorts of stuff.
Oh, well, it's kind of like The Gathering, but on Wednesday, right?
Yep, you got it.
The Calling Radio Show every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time only on
things subsist and do not die, but only retire a little from sight and afterwards return again. Nothing is dead. People find themselves dead and endure the mock funerals and mournful obituaries. And there they stand, looking out the window, sound and well, in some new and strange disguise. This secret must be told to the world, and they must tell it. Because they are not dead, we know this, and we'll prove it. So join Mike and Dave every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for the Odyssey Files, only on Para-X.
Welcome back to The Gathering, everyone. This is Stephanie. And Heidi's with us, too.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know you were waiting for me. I thought you were just dive right back into our topic here.
Well, and we're talking to Howard Garrett of Orca Network, and we're talking about the orca whales of the Pacific Northwest, specifically the resident whales known as J-Clan, and there's three pods out there. And we were talking about how spiritual it is to see them and how people love them. And once you see them, you fall in love, and it just seems like you love them forever. Am I right, Howard? It's true. It's absolutely true.
Right. It doesn't wear off. I can attest. It's been 40-some years, and I'm still in it.
Yes, and you're so lucky that you get to live there, can I just say? I was telling Howard that I think sometimes when you see them, they just grab a hold of you. And Howard was talking about something about, you know, how they know if you are trying to help them, correct? And I do think that they know this, and I do think they come around, actually. I think they know, spiritually, they know you're there. And, you know, let me tell you this. So last July, so I didn't get out there this year, but last July, my daughter Casey and I were out there, and the whales had hardly been seen in the Salish Sea around Salmon Island, you know, and normally, you know, 10 years ago, if you went out in, you know, June, July, August, they were seen every day, pretty much. One of the pods was around. And so last year, they had only seen them once or twice, I think. And Casey and I were out there, and Howard, we saw them every day. We were there for a week. Huh. It was a week in July. And, you know, my favorite thing to do on the island is to go sit out on that west side on the land bank and wait, you know. And we did. I mean, I think it was, we were out there for a week, and I think we saw a little bit of them every single day. There were a few days where we saw the whole tribe pass by, which was is phenomenal. But we at least saw one or two, you know. And I remember Katie Jones from out there looked at me and said, you guys are so lucky because we haven't seen them all year until now. And I'm like, well, it's because I'm here. You know, I don't know.
Yes, I know. Just, yeah, just, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, no. But it is true. And like you said, they just, and these whales. So here's what's so heartbreaking is these whales have called the Salish Sea and this whole surrounding area home for thousands of years. And now, because of the actions of humans, they're having to leave that area to find food. And do we even know where they are?
Well, they're out in the Pacific, and there's really nobody out there to keep track of them. There have been some observers off of Vancouver Island, which is, mm-hmm. you know, sort of at the entrance to the Strait of Juan de Fuca that goes out to the ocean. And they have found some of them, J's, K's, and L's, actually, out yeah. there on a bank that is a very productive area, a lot of upwelling. So it's where there are a lot of sea life of all kinds, including the salmon that they love. But they're also down the coast and, you know, hovering around the mouth of the Columbia River to gather all of those or gobble them down, you know, the ones that are headed upstream. And some of those kind of overshoot into Oregon for 50 or 100 miles. And so, you know, they go down there, too. And they've been seen as far south as California, Monterey, California, going after the Sacramento River system salmon. So they're searching, you know, far and wide and high and low. And that has kept them out of their real core, I think, their home.
Yeah.
Traditional habitat, which is the Salish Sea, you know, for almost all summer. So
now,
the jays have been around a little bit lately.
Mm-hmm, I have seen that. So what about the Fraser River? Does the Fraser River still supply a lot of their salmon? I know last year when we were up there, we went on Katie's boat, actually, and they took us up to the mouth of the Fraser, and I think it was J-Pod that we saw up there. But Does that bring in, that brings in a lot of salmon for them too?
It always has. It always has. Mm-hmm. That's why they've been there in the summer. That's been their main prey from June through August, usually.
Mm-hmm.
But not so much the last 2 years.
Yeah.
For, you know, multiple causes, it's very hard to sort of parse that out into, you know, how much of it is pollution or irrigation diversion or overcatching, overharvest. You know, we don't know. The Canadian government seems to be very serious now about protecting those Chinook. They're finally on an emergency basis, and so they'll hopefully find that and find some funding, you know, to fix things like those dams and diversions and all the other things. There was also a rock slide about 300 miles upstream of the Fraser that blocked the river, not quite entirely, and some of the bigger, stronger fish are getting up, and I don't see how when I look at it, but they're amazing fish.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, some, and I don't, you know, I don't know if anyone has a good count, but, you know, some are making it, but it's going to cut into the overall productivity of the upper waters. So, you know, they're grappling with that too, but at least, you know, it's on their list. I mean, it's like their to-do list is, you know, fix that rock slide, fix the pollution, fix whatever it takes, and they have applied some very serious harvest restrictions. It's got a lot of Canadians, you know, squealing about it, but, you know, that's sort of what they're doing first off. That's one thing they can do by law, and so they're doing that now, and I hope they're pursuing every other environmental avenue also. Anyway, yeah, we're trying to fix it, but it sure looks bad right now.
Oh, man, that's really good news, though. I mean, I didn't know any of that, so that's awesome. Jerry, who is from the Calling Radio Show, is asking a question. He's saying, is it true that babies born in the JK and L pods plus the Northern pods babies, only 42% of them live, but the transient babies have a greater birthing possibility possibly because of climate change and pollution within the sound?
Well, I mean, that is true in the numbers, and the 42% basically miscarriage rate that is really the main problem. But the cause is a little bit, you know, easier to see because transients eat the seals and sea lions, and they are plentiful.
Yes.
Every time you turn around, you know, there's a seal sticking its head up.
Yeah, it's true.
That's just great. So they have had baby upon baby. Their population is increasing. And we've gotten to know them because the residents have been so scarce. And they have been, you know, transients have been so plentiful that, you know, we've gotten to know our favorite transients. The natural lines that we see over and over, and, you know, the offspring and the kids. And so they're becoming known like the residents have always been known. But, you know, I mean, our hearts are still with the residents, I think, you know, for the most part, because, it's sort of how they move. And the fact that they are, they live in these big extended families that travel together most of the time, you know, the whole pods, all of, you know, J pod, which is 22 now, I believe. And you know, they'll be all together most of the time. And you know, L pod comes in and adds another 40 whales to the mix, you know, and so you just see the whole seascape, you know, just dotted with fins and blows, and it's a beautiful thing. And so, you know, they're still kind of our favorites, but the transients anyway are doing really well. Because they've got lots of food. I mean, it's and, you know, and they're getting all the intense attention. Well, it's not all that intense, you know, but they're getting the whale watching, and they're subject to the same pollution. In fact, they've got higher loads of pollution because they eat higher on the food chain, and the seals are more, you know, polluted than the salmon. So they've got higher loads, but they're still reproducing just fine and increasing their population. So it's really a matter of food supply. You know, it just comes down to that.
Well, and I think for people who are listening, they probably don't know the difference between transients and residents. So do you want to address that?
Oh, yeah, because it's kind of unheard of in wildlife biology to have two different genetically distinct clans, cultures of any animal. I mean, you won't see this with bears or anything else. So it's really unique among orcas that you have these populations of strictly mammal eaters. They won't touch a fish, don't like fish. And strictly fish eaters. They won't touch a seal or a sea lion. But they're side by side, basically, or they cross paths all the time. They sort of avoid contact, including interbreeding, for hundreds of thousands of years. And, you know, I mean, from a distance, they look alike. They're because they've been genetically separate for probably over 100,000 years. There are minor differences, you know, that you can see in some of them, you know, a little bit sharper dorsal fin in the transients and, you know, a few other little things like that. It's mainly in their behavior and their group size, because transients, because they sneak up on very wary pinnipeds, seals and sea lions, they, you know, they have to travel in small groups, you know, three, four, or five at a time usually. And they use ingenious methods, strategies. You know, they'll surround and triangulate around the seals and sea lions and come in from different directions. And, and they'll sometimes, you know, pretend to be leaving, you know, on the surface, while others are lurking underneath, you know. And so once the seals or sea lions get complacent, they grab them. So,
Yeah, it's a whole different way of living. Violence. If you've ever seen them, I've been out in the boats, and you know they say, "Well, this is nature stuff." Well, yeah, but I don't like to see this. You know, yeah,
they're moments totally out there all the time.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. But the residents, you know, because they're fish eaters, you know, And they hunt together, right? They kind of push them out, and they have...
They do.
They're so smart that they kind of have ones that kind of lag behind or something, so that the, you know, they do this with whale-watching boats, Howard. So they have a couple that kind of hang out and keep all the whale-watch boats there, and then the others go for the food, right? This is what
I believe it. I believe it, yeah. They'll They will do that. They're very smart.
They are, and we've seen it before, time after time. And, it's really funny. Yeah.
Yeah. So some will, you know, keep the boats busy while the others kind of go off and find the salmon. I am sure.
So what do we think about the boats? Now, I remember for a while they said the whale-watching boats were really hard on the whales, which I can imagine, especially like 4th of July weekend, if they're out there, you know, back in the day when they were out all the time, because those whale-watch boats are just merciless. They just follow those poor babies no matter what they're doing.
Well, yeah. They have, and it was just, you know, the Wild West out there 10 or 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of the uproar, to give credit where it's due, and the resulting, you know, federal and state regulations and a little bit of enforcement, not enough, but the whale watch boats know people care. And that they understand. And just in the last 2 years, it's become scientifically known that the main problem is noise, and the noise is worse when they're going fast or turning fast or accelerating. And so they have learned, the whale watch boats have learned to, like, tiptoe, to, like, come in at 7 knots or less from a half a mile away. You know, the rule is if you see a blow, go slow.
Yeah.
You know, which is just courteous.
Yes.
I mean, it comes down to basic respect. And so they're learning that their customers and the public demand that. And the captains and the naturalists are pretty sensitive to that, too.
They are.
Once they understand it. Yeah.
They are.
So I think the whole situation is vastly improved from where it was 10 years ago.
I think it's the private boaters that are the ones that you need to watch out for. And I know last year,
absolutely,
I think we called on a couple because they were just too close and we were on shore. And so, of course, we were yelling, screaming, hollering, and I'm sure they didn't hear us. But we called at the whale hotline, or I don't remember what the number is out there, but we called and said, "Hey, come out, because these people are disturbing the whales," you know, and people just need to do that right away. If they see this happening, call.
Right, and if you get a number on a boat, call it in to NOAA right away, and they'll get a letter.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's the way to do that, you know, once it's happened. But to prevent that is saturation education at every marina, boat licensing, boat shows. You know, they should all learn these, you know, basic rules of behavior around whales.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people just don't know and don't realize people care that much.
Yeah, so, yeah, I know. Heidi, you've been awfully quiet. You need to ask some questions.
Oh, I'm listening. There's good information. It's not a topic that I'm familiar with, so it's just interesting to learn.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so I just, so people should call their legislatures. They should say, we need to do something about the situation. Let's breach the dams. But here's another thing I will suggest to people is go out there and have a look at these whales. And, you know, you may see the transients because the residents aren't around a lot, but you'll still come back feeling like, oh my God, what did I just experience?
Right. Well, in fact, coming right up, usually starting around October 1st, which is my wife's birthday, so it's usually a birthday present.
Yes.
Is that the residents come down into Puget Sound, to the Seattle area, that sort of long inlet, and they're going after their second most favorite salmon, which are chum salmon.
Oh, yeah.
And so that run, you know, usually in pretty big numbers up a couple of dozen rivers in Puget Sound. So, you know, they sort of mill around and become, you know, very available for the orcas. So they may come down 10 or 12 times between October 1st and middle of December or so. So that would be a good time to come out and be able to watch them from shore. Well, we have a map that shows 123 good viewpoints up and down Puget Sound where people can go and just, you know, be on the shore on a bluff or on a beach and watch the whales go by. So
nothing better. Nothing better.
Yes, absolutely. It's a great experience. And we love to share stories. Something about seeing whales sort of prompts people to want to share that. You know, share the feeling and the whole experience, and so we're happy to be a watering hole for that. You know, for
absolutely
to tell their friends and everybody.
Now,
I have
to bring up Tokate, aka Lolita, because when she is the last surviving baby that was taken from her mother back in the 70s to be put in a cement pond, right, at one of these shows. She is currently at the Miami Seaquarium. We learned about her way back in 1996, the first time we ever came out there, and she's still in captivity.
Right.
And can you talk about her? Because you guys have a whole plan to bring her back.
Right. Well, we have a campaign. We have a plan. We have a CPEN place. And you know, it can be done very safely, professionally, you know, in phases. And she's not just going to be plopped down in the ocean, but cared for as long as it takes and maybe retired in, you know, a spacious sea pen that will just be, you know, 100,000% better than a bathtub, you know, concrete cell. You know, that part is ready for her at any time. Of course, she's making money for the park, and so, you know, she's doing two performances a day. But the story about her, beyond you know, the obvious, you know, abomination of what happened to her, you know, being kidnapped as a youngster, basically, and shipped off and having to be, you know, a slave to a circus entertainment. So, but what she has shown us is her incredible strength and depth of resilience and will to live and ability to overcome these incredibly harsh conditions that she's in. It's now 49 years that she's been in there. All the others had died by 1987. We're talking about 40 others that had been captured and shipped around the world. And so she, even among orcas, which are very highly adapted and strong, she somehow has a well of you know, deep courage and gracefulness, because she has not like lost it like so many whales, like Tilikum in Blackfish, you know, who you know lashed out and killed three people that are known, but she has not. She's not hurt anybody that we know about, and if she seriously hurt somebody, we'd know about it. But in all these years, you know, she's still, not that she doesn't have her moods. I mean, she refuses mm-hmm. sometimes, and she'll slap her tail when she's supposed to be doing a breach or something. But, mm-hmm. You know, she doesn't hurt anybody. Mm-hmm. And so she has this sort of, this courage, but this gentleness about mm-hmm. her that seems to keep her going. And from what I have learned about the, you know, the cognitive capacity, the brain anatomy, and the ability, the empathy, you know, that is mm-hmm. built in, you know, that they have a lobe in their brain that we really don't have, called the paralimbic lobe, mm-hmm. that actually seems to like integrate the right and left hemispheres of the brain and to process emotions, including empathy, you know, the feelings of others. So she is able to sort of to do that all the time. And of course, this long, long memory. So I am just convinced that she still knows who she is. I mean, who she still is to this day. Yeah. Because that's, you know, how she was raised, you know, her mother, her family, her whole mm-hmm. clan that raised her. She learned the language. She learned the hunting, you know, the catching fish techniques and mm-hmm. everything that she needed to know. She learned, and I think she still got that completely intact in her memory, like, you know, the mm-hmm. album of snapshots, you know, mm-hmm. videos that she is able to just, you know, fall back on, and that gives her continual hope and continual belief that someday this will all be over and she'll be mm-hmm. home again. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, all of that sort of combined is somehow keeping her going. And
yes.
she's just, you know, she's a miracle and a wonder and an inspiration to us all. To,
she is.
To be
and
able
that
to
is.
Have that kind of courage.
And that is my biggest wish, is to someday be out on San Juan Island and see her there. For
yes.
sure.
I hope so.
Well, Howard, you know what? This has been a delightful hour. I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about the whales with us. This has been phenomenal.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This
I've enjoyed every minute of it. I appreciate all your great questions and follow-throughs and your own passion and interests. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And yes, very informative. And you know, this will be, we'll send you the link to our pod, because it'll be on our, the recorded version will be on our website. So, you know, you can certainly share that around too. So we have about a minute left. Howard, if there's anything exciting happening out there, you'll let us know and come back on the show. Yes,
I sure will.
And if you find out that yeah. Hey, Lolita's coming home, we'll be the first to know, right?
Okay, yes,
we'll have you on the show to celebrate.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, there will be some celebration. That
yes.
will be the most incredible event.
Oh my God, I'll be there. I'll be there for sure.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Well, everyone, thanks for listening in. Everybody in the chat room, full chat room, lots of good stuff going on. Thank you for tuning in and sharing your questions and chatting. Everybody listening, thank you so much. Para X, thank you for hosting us. It's always a pleasure. And Sarge, best producer on the planet right here. So thank you for
absolutely.
For managing us, keeping us
yes.
in line.
Yes.
And Steph, we're off for another week.
Yes. So next week we have a guest, Jim Tree is coming on board, and he's a healer. So Heidi, I'm sure you'll have a million questions to ask him. I will send you his information, but he's on next week. So everyone, come back with us, and we will have a great week, and we will see you next week.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Bye-bye.